Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Thank you, one and all, for being with us and for sharing some time and hanging out, because otherwise, why would I do this? It's great fun knowing that you're out there and that we can share this with you. My guest tonight is Barbara Handclaw, who has a fascinating background. She's been on the show before, and we had great fun, and we will have more fun with her in just a few minutes after tonight's metaphysical musing. And it's a real metaphysical musing tonight because I'm going to explain to you the words that I use at the beginning and the end of the show, because I'm guessing there are some people there going, why does he say thank you, one and all? What a strange, arcane thing to say. I say that because it's an invocation, and an invocation is inviting spirit into the situation, the space, the time, whatever it is that you're doing. And there's lots and lots and lots of ways that's done in all the different traditions around the world. And basically, it is acknowledging that there is a creative source in the universe, often in Western traditions called God, but there are all kinds of different stories and different names. And that there is also both a goddess or Earth Mother or whatever it is that takes the intention that God puts out, that Source Creator puts out, and makes it manifest in the world, and all the creations that are manifested that way. So people see God as being divine and the earth as being mundane, but that's not really right either. They're both sacred. They're both divine. Everything that is created is divine. And I really love the Native American way of looking at it, you know, and you talk about Creator and Mother Earth, but there's an expression, all my relations, which sometimes said I'm related, we are all related. In the Lakota language, it's Metakwayase, and it's used a lot. And it's saying everything that is alive is my relative. Everything that is alive is part of me. I am part of them. And that everything is one thing. So I probably could keep going with this for quite a while. But one of the ways I say it is either blessed one, blessed ones, acknowledging source and creations, or one and all, the one being everything and the source of everything, and the all being all of us, all of the pieces, all of creation in this whatever it is together. Because it's something we need to remember. We are in this together, whatever it is, whatever space-time is, whatever creation is. I always love that physics talks about the Big Bang, that initially there was a point that contained everything, and then it exploded and spread all the everything all over. And it started to grow, and it started to change, and it started to evolve. And the guy who invented that and came up with the name really didn't like it because it did sound mystical and religious, but they couldn't come up with something better. And the Big Bang is Western science's creation myth. And there are many, many others, and a lot of them sound a whole lot like the Big Bang, interestingly enough. So thank you, one and all, for being with me. And let's have some fun with Barbara Handclaw. Hey, Barbara, thanks so much for being on the show again.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
Oh, a pleasure as always. And I want you to reintroduce yourself to the listeners, But you have this wonderful background that makes you the perfect person to ask, what is going on this planet at this time? Because it's getting pretty wacky.
Yeah, certainly astrology is a good background for that question, you know. But I'm the author of a whole bunch of books in many different fields. I've gone into new physics and quantum reality and evolution and astrology and past life regression under hypnosis, all that stuff. And I also was a publisher for 20 years doing acquisitions for Bear & Company. So I've really been right in the thick of things. I was born in 1943, and then I was involved in the whole 60s awakening. And I've really just been in the thick of things my whole life and attempting to express this incredible time that we're living in at this moment. And so then a couple of years ago, I switched to fiction. I've now committed the rest of my life to writing fiction, and I'm in the middle of a trilogy right now. The first book is Revelations of the Ruby Crystal, which you've already read. And I'm in the middle of the sequel at this point. The Ruby Crystal came out in 2015. And I'm attempting to explore what's going on from 2011 to 2020. And the reason I chose that period of time was because I really believe that this is the major nexus point of when the age of Pisces is going out and the age of Aquarius is coming in. And then what happens is all of the different structures in society and systems in our world have to shift into a new lens of consciousness, which is always very traumatic. If we wanted to, we could talk about some of the past changes. And so regarding what's really going on right now, I'm just deeply, deeply immersed in attempting to describe it in a work of fiction, because that gives me much more reach than I can attain with nonfiction.
Yeah, yeah. And that's obviously a very traditional way of telling a story that would be very difficult to do if you're trying to make it all factual. Gives you all that flexibility of bringing in other elements and other emotions. But you have the background to tell us what the various traditions have said about this place and time that we're in. The way I look at it, the point of change in the Mayan calendar was a turning point and the beginning of the great shift from darkness to light, or however you want to express that. But before every great transition, there is a period of chaos.
Yeah.
And that's what
And
we're
I
in
think
the
transition, actually, I totally agree with you. It's 2011, 2012, and I use those two dates because of the traditional interpretation of the Mayan calendar and then Carl Coleman's research. And it doesn't really matter. It's a one-year difference, you know. But what I really liked about what Coleman did was he had a very evolutionary approach to this moment in time. But I think what happened, and I know Coleman would actually agree with this comment, is that as soon as we actually came to the end of the calendar and the shift occurred, then we really started going into a situation that we're experiencing as chaos. In other words, you know, there was the end of the calendar is what set the whole thing off. But now we're in that period of just incredible, intensifying chaos at this time.
Well, one of the things that, can you say that David is saying, that keeps David saying, is knowing that the word apocalypse is just Greek for it shall be revealed. Mm-hmm. It will no longer be hidden. And that's what we're experiencing as chaos. All the things that used to be, that always existed, but existed in the shadows, existed in hiding, that most people might have suspected but or didn't suspect, but were there all the time, are now happening in plain view. And that makes it look like everything is suddenly outrageously crazy and violent.
Yeah.
But it's all stuff that was already going on.
I do agree, and especially regarding the issue of black people, black young men particularly, being abused by police. When I was a child in Michigan, I knew that was going on. But now that everybody has cameras, of course, now everybody is realizing that the stuff actually goes on. So I do completely agree with you. However, I think what's happening right now also is just a rising tide of violence that seems to go on when one age shifts into the next one, because the ending of the previous age is so traumatic for people on the planet as well as systems. And, you know, the age of Pisces, the age that we're going out of from around 100 BC until around now, and these are hazy boundaries, because when you look up in the sky, the area between the constellations is kind of a judgment call. And so you kind of have to watch human culture to see what's actually going on. But the age of Pisces was all about the development of organized religion, and especially the three major religions that are coming from Abraham. And so we're in the middle of an experience of letting those things go. And they're very deeply entrenched in systems and in individuals, and it's very, very difficult. And that's why we're having so much violence at this time.
Right. Right. And also finger-pointing with the violence. You know, you're different than I am, so that makes you wrong, and therefore I have to do this violent thing. And I know for me it doesn't seem any different other than the level of violence. If I look at the Middle East and what ISIL, Daesh, is doing, or I look at the core of American far-right Christian conversation that has gotten very violent and paranoid, they're not doing as much as frequently in the same ways, and they don't have an organized army to make as big a mess as quickly, but the rhetoric is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then another thing that I think this is where astrology can shine, although I don't find a lot of my fellow astrologers really paying a lot of attention to this issue, is that when you change from one age to the other, if you are acutely conscious of what's going away, it actually opens you up to have more energy for what's coming in. And so another thing that helps at this moment in time is the age before the age of Pisces was the age of Aries. And the age of Aries was around 2300 BC until about 100 BC. So it's the age of 2,000 years of development just before the period when Christianity started. And what we need to understand about the age of Aries is that it was the development of organized warfare. And if you go back into anthropology and archaeology, you won't find anybody saying there was organized warfare before around 2000 BC. Of course, people were robbing camps and hitting each other over the head and you know, all that stuff. People always do that. But we're talking about organized warfare, which is a society which organizes its resources in order to carry out warfare, which, of course, is what the United States is doing right now. So one of the issues that we're dealing with that I think very few people seem to comprehend is that when the Age of Aries ended and the Age of Pisces started, the Age of Aries didn't go away to the degree that it would have ideally. And what happened is the Age of Pisces has to do with the belief in a specific God program and organized religion. And it basically got superimposed on top of the development of warfare. So we're actually dealing, you know, with a shift out of 4,000, 4,400, 500 years of development, which also, of course, is all the patriarchal period. So we're also dealing with the issue of the development of the patriarchy, which is so painful for people in their own personal relationships as well as difficulties on the planet.
Right. Right. And when you superimpose religion over whatever kind of violence, it becomes righteous. It becomes okay because you have a framework that allows it, that gives a reason for it.
That's right, yeah.
And never made any sense to me, but it's...
And then, you know, I've really time-traveled over long periods of time in my own research. One of my books where I really... basically studied 20,000 years of human consciousness. It was called Catastrophobia, and that was republished in 2011 as Awakening the Planetary Mind, in case people have read a newer version. But in that book, I surveyed maybe, you know, like, you know, basically 12 or 14 great ages. And what I found when I did that research, which is not really in the book because it's something that I just kept noticing as I went along, as far as I can tell, human beings on this planet, and that's philosophers and intellectuals and teachers or whoever, as far as I can tell, people generally understood the concept of the change of ages, and they looked forward to the shift into new consciousness, and they intentionally and consciously let go of the old elements. And as far as I can tell, this period that we're living in right now is the only time in about the last 10 or 20,000 years where we're going through this experience totally unconsciously. You know, you remember the dawning of the Age of Aquarius, the musical.
Right.
And you remember the effect that had on people. It just lit people up. But then what happened, as usual, is the media and the intellectual control field debunked the idea and stuffed it back down and got rid of it, when actually it is a cultural concept that is extremely useful for people at this time. So, you know, I'm just trying to, as I usually do as a writer, I'm just trying to get the word out as best I can, because I think people actually do better when they start functioning with that concept, especially right now. You know, with it, at this point, we're at that nexus point where the old stuff is just flying out, and the new stuff is flying in mainly through through technology and interconnecting. And the new stuff, of course, we all love the new stuff, but of course, there's not much perspective on what's happening to us regarding the kinds of technology that we're using, especially as we move into robotics. Whoa.
Right. Well, the other way it's coming in is with the new kids.
Yeah.
With the indigo children and the crystal children.
Oh, yeah. And that's, I never lose hope, because, well, I'm lucky enough right now to have a little granddaughter who's almost four. And then I interact with other children, too. And if you interact with the children, you're not going to lose hope, because the children coming in, that, and especially have been coming in the last 20 or 30 years, are really quite extraordinary. I mean, I raised four kids myself, and what I'm seeing now is just beyond anything I was seeing when I was raising kids.
Yeah, the kids are amazing. They're doing amazing things earlier in life. You know, whether it's creative things or it's understanding, or, you know, I love the fact that, you know, the old paradigm is that little kids had imaginary playmates and talked about seeing things that the adults didn't see. But at four or five, you wanted to socialize that out. So by six and seven, when they went to school, they weren't talking about it. And these kids just look at you and go, what? It's real. You can't tell me it's not real. I'm not going to stop talking about it. You, if you don't experience that, that's your problem. Not my problem.
And they're changing the school systems too.
Right.
Because they just won't put up with just sitting still and memorizing useless data all day. Especially with the kind of equipment that they're using.
Right. Well, it's, you know, that transition also stigmatizes those children as, you know, the indigo kids get called ADD, and the crystal children get called autistic, because their behavior fits those patterns, even though it's not happening for the reasons that the clinical diagnoses say they are. So it hasn't completely caught up, but they're pushing the boundary, and hopefully it will shift fast enough that those kids won't get caught up in that nonsense. But every once in a while I see something online of kids especially doing things musically at, you know, 4, 5, 6, 9 years old, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is, you know, total artistry and genius and completely natural to them.
Yeah. And I don't know what age you are, but I can honestly say that when I go back to when I was a young person, we didn't have geniuses who were 8, 9, and 10 years old creating businesses based on their own original ideas, you know?
Right.
That's been one of the most amazing things that we've observed. And if the parents just support them a little bit, they just go for it.
Right. And because of the access of being able to do it on the internet, a lot of the things that were big, ponderous, heavy things to create to have the business aren't obstacles at all anymore. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I can really see a lot of this in my own work, because my first book is, I'm trying to think, 1976. So I go back pretty far. And I can tell by the people that I'm teaching, as well as the people who are reading me, I can see the advances right in their responses and their knowledge. And it's kind of funny to be a person who spent your whole life acquiring a lot of knowledge, and then mm-hmm. younger people are coming along, and they instantly have it.
Right.
All they have to do is tune in and follow a thread, and they just go right there, which, of course, I love seeing it. But it's fun sometimes to look back and remember how hard I had to work to master this or that concept, whatever it was, you know?
Right.
That may be another reason I felt like switching to fiction. I know the main reason I did it was that I love fiction, and I especially love classical fiction. And I love what an author can do by creating characters. And so this gave me the opportunity to create 8 or 10 or 12 characters, all of whom were geniuses in a different area. Like one of them is a Mayan calendar genius, another one is a master of history, another one theology, so on and so forth. And once I created them and they got going, then they talk to each other, and insights come up as a result of them talking to each other that I could never bring through in nonfiction. Really magical things are happening. Right when I'm writing it, like I'm working on the sequel now, and I sometimes just sit down and just write without even thinking anything. I mean, I think I'm probably reading some pretty major records as far as I can tell, because I used to have to work pretty hard to write, but now it's just flowing right in.
And it's always fun when you read something and go, really? Where'd that come from? That's really good.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
I don't have books, but I have, you know, aphorisms and flashes of things that come through. Yeah. And go, really?
Well, when you create characters, too, if you're really serious about it the way I am, they become your friends. Like it's right. been kind of hard for me to socialize, because I have this group of friends that I hang out with for 4 or 5 hours every day. And what happens with them is, just like friends, you get to know them better and better and better. And I look back to the beginning of a character in the first novel, and I can't believe how they've developed and grown through this experience. It's really a wonderful thing to be able to create this way.
I love it. There must be a joke in here about having imaginary friends, but...
Yeah, now I just created a bunch of them who will stay in my office. They don't even run away.
Right.
I have a little tiny office. It's like 4 by 6 feet. They're all in here.
It's very crowded. So let's make sure that people can find you online. What's your website?
Hand Clow, CLOW, and hand like a hand, 2012.com.
And... Do you have any special things going on that people should know about and go look for it?
Whenever I teach, I post it on the website. I'm not one of those people who sends out a million tweets or whatever everybody sends out. So busy. So what I do, unfortunately, people seem to be able to handle this. What I do is I post an article usually every 3 or 4 months when something major is going on. So I post articles on there. I have information about teaching, information about all the books is on there, of course. My husband, Jerry, is a cranial sacral therapist, and his information's on there, and people find him there. And so I use it just as a basis for people, is the way I would put it. I'm not very technical.
But that's where people can tune into everything that you're offering at the moment.
Yes.
And I think you're on Facebook as well?
Nope.
If I remember, you're not.
No, but people somehow they manage to keep in touch, because I'm, you know, not so much that I'm answering them back, but they're able to watch. I find that with the type of concentration that I need to use, like I've described to you, I don't find that I can be interactive very much on the system itself. It actually takes down in my psychic power. And so I stay away from it, although I have incredible respect for it, because I think it's making everybody psychic, which I love.
Well, and it's a very low profile model of how the whole universe works. So people are realizing the interconnectedness mm-hmm. of everything.
Yeah.
through the technology and the things that they're doing. They just don't know that's what they're doing.
And see, that what you just did is you popped out a perfect description of the Age of Aquarius right there.
Right.
Because that's what
it's
about.
That's a good turning point for us to come back to, because we're going to go to a break. We will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. Who knows? My guest tonight is Barbara Handclough. We're having a wonderful time picking her brain, and we will be back in just a little bit. This is David Franklin Farkas on the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere. We're going to have more fun.
Styling your hair every day, and do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great. Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg!
Ha-ha! I win! Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Barbara Handclough. And where were we? We were talking about so much.
You were just given a good definition of the Age of Aquarius, interconnectivity.
You know, that having the underlying framework and the understanding of astrology. I don't speak astrology, so not one of the things that has ever been a big part of the way that I work. And I'm always so impressed with people that have that understanding, which is an ancient understanding. And all over the world, people have studied whatever they called the constellation in their particular culture, and knew that it was telling something. And so I'm always very impressed with people that understand all that stuff. Not my particular corner of reading things. So explain it to us. What is this next phase that we're going into? What should we expect?
Well, the concept that we're dealing with is a concept called the Great Ages. And this comes from Plato. The last good version we have of this whole system is coming from Plato. And it's based on the precession of the equinoxes and the fact that there's a great circle in the sky that we are going around in because the Earth's axis is tilting. And so one of the important things to realize about this circle is that there's high points in it and there's low points in it in terms of evolution. This circle describes, the Great Ages describe the different stages of evolution of culture. And so we're coming out of a very long period, a very, very dark age, and we're starting to move into an age of higher consciousness. And so one of the things that does for me is that gives me some encouragement, because I do think things have been kind of tough, especially the last 4,000 years. And so the age of Aquarius, the one that we're moving into, is ruled by the planet Uranus. And that's the planet out there, it's way out there past Saturn, and then Neptune's the next planet after that. And Uranus rules revolution, and it rules radical change and transformation. It's the most innovative and transformational of all of the planets in the zodiac. And so the age we're moving into is an age of transformation, and that's why it feels the way it does. One of the reasons this is difficult right now is it's not just about letting go of the age of Pisces and organized religion, and before that, organized warfare. But it's also about getting used to some of the most wild and erratic and crazy and creative energy that we experience in our cultures. Uranian creativity is a very, very high vibrational, profound level of creativity. And so we're all being pushed into a new level of personal and cultural transformation. And in the early stages, I think anyone would agree that when you first start a process of transformation, that's when it's the most difficult. And so that's where we are. We're just in those beginning stages.
Right. Yeah. And we're also watching, we can now see a lot of that dark stuff, as we were saying before. So we've got both going on. We can see the bad stuff, and the new, more creative stuff is kind of rattling us.
Yeah, that's right. And then the more we take on the new creative forms, then the more we're kind of affected by the letting go of the old energy. I think we're at that point right now, at least I think I am personally, where the degree to which I can feel the old energy going away is at a very heightened level right now. When there's a bombing someplace, or a truck mowing down people in Nice, in France, I find that I feel those things very strongly. I can really feel what it's like for the people who are unfortunately having to go through experiences like that. And then the East-West tension, between Islam and Christianity and Judaism is really, really painful to live with.
Yeah, most people don't realize how much the planet is changing and how much those very emotional, violent events affect us. I know for me, and in a lot of my clients and other people that I know, the shift in the planet and the shift in the solar system that's creating more solar flare activity, more solar wind, geomagnetic storms, earthquakes, all kinds of changes in the atmosphere and changes in the planet are causing physical pain for a lot of people in ways that they don't understand until someone says, oh, by the way. And at the same time, these events where there's a tremendous amount of violence and emotion are affecting people. Years before all of the stuff that's going on now, a friend of mine used to call me up and say, I think I'm going crazy. I'm full of grief and anguish. And we finally figured out that it was because somewhere in the world, a large group of women and their children were either in danger or had died.
Yeah. And yeah, I definitely pick up. Yeah.
Yeah. And anytime that happened, it went through her body. And she eventually realized that when that was going on, she needed to look at the news.
Yeah, and see, this is really good information, David, as far as I'm concerned, because that happens to me too. And if I can just identify why I'm feeling that way, then I can get away from the idea that it's something going on in my own house or my own community or whatever, and I can realize that I'm picking up on something, and then it's easier to tolerate it, you know. And then the other thing you alluded to a moment ago is the issue of what's going on in the solar system. And it's a well-known fact from Russian astronomy and Russian astrophysics that our solar system is in a part of the galactic arm right now where there's a lot of debris. And It isn't just Earth that's being affected. You know, Pluto's being affected, Mars, Jupiter, all of the planets are heating up and they have all kinds of changes going on. And then if you follow astrology at all, for me, astrology is a really archetypal thing. Like, I feel Jupiter. Like, Jupiter means well-being and fortune. You know, and so if there's a gigantic storm on Jupiter or some kind of destruction by a comet or something like that, I feel those things because that's part of my archetypal world. And so the whole solar system, the whole archetypal realm, like Mars using energy, male energy especially, and Venus using receptivity, all those archetypes are being very, very deeply affected right now by what's going on in the galaxy itself. And so this experience we're having right now just isn't just an evolution on Earth. It's also an evolution in the galaxy. It's very profound.
Right. And most people, as we used to say in my old neighborhood, are just doing their sidewalk act. They're just walking around doing what they always did, you know, trying to keep things going and not fall down. And this stuff never crosses their mind, crosses their consciousness, but it's affecting them every day.
That's true.
I had a client who came to me for other reasons, but she sent me an email, and I just went to my doctor because I heard all over, and I thought I suddenly had arthritis, and he couldn't find anything, and I started telling her about the effect of solar activity on certain sensitive people. Can feel like fibromyalgia or arthritis, and it'll come and go based on the intensity of the solar activity.
Yeah.
But if she hadn't been talking to me, it never would have crossed her mind. Certainly her physician wouldn't know about that stuff. So
the thing we're talking about here is that the more people comprehend what's actually happening, that the better they're going to do, which has certainly been my experience. If you can't figure out what's causing something, you're just kind of really stuck. And then you go to the doctor to see if you have arthritis, you know. And so another reason I went into fiction and created these characters is that fiction often will reach a much larger audience than the audience that you and I can normally get in touch with. And like Dan Brown, for instance, with his novels, has really reached a wide range of people. And, of course, Dan Brown's greatest gift to us is people waking up and realizing that Jesus was not only a divine, brilliant individual, but he also was a normal man who had a wife and a family. And then what happens for all of us, just because Dan Brown opened up the door, so to speak, is that all of us start having a closer relationship with Christ, if that's what we choose. And it also enables us to identify with some of these people a couple of thousand years ago. And we can feel more about what they were experiencing. Because, of course, Christianity and the issue of Christ starts, that's the beginning of the Piscean Age. Mm-hmm. So another element in this trilogy is that the issue of Jesus and Mary Magdalene is a big deal in the trilogy. In the first book, it's just introduced kind of at a light level, and now I'm really deeply into it. Because I think our images of who Christ and Mary Magdalene were, or whatever spiritual teacher you believe in, I think our ability to identify with them and feel like we can be like them and we can even do the things that they do is a very profound awakening that we need to have at this time.
Right. Right. And, of course, he did say, all that I can do and more you can do.
Yeah, and look at the modern healing movement. Look at this, explosion of people who are working with really, really highly developed healing techniques, which has to come. In the age of Aquarius will have a lot to do with energy healing and healing with consciousness, and we won't be going to doctors in the way that people have for so many hundreds of years. That's a function of the age of Pisces, and that's actually going to pass away.
Yeah, and that's another one of those transitions where there's that whole structure that's been created for Western medicine, some of which is marvelous, and other, I always say that Western medicine is great for acute problems, but not so good for chronic problems.
Yeah.
And the things that are good for chronic problems are the traditional medical techniques from all over the world that have always worked.
Yeah. And allopathic medicine is fabulous for surgery.
Right.
Or
imaging, if you want to know what's going on inside the body, the technology is great. If you break a bone or have some other physical injury or a sudden heart attack or that kind of thing, there are interventions that are absolutely spectacular. And if you've got something that's a disease process, not so much.
Yeah.
Right. Because the what they have come up with as their focus is medication. And all the medications have side effects, so you have to give another medication for the side effect of the first medication. But it's a very narrow focus that doesn't include all the other things that could inform it.
Yeah.
In China, all the different kinds of medical professionals work in the same hospital. So they have Western-trained doctors, they have Chinese herbalists, they have acupuncturists, they have qigong masters who are basically doing energy healing, and the team figures out what combination of treatments is appropriate, and as the patient goes through the healing process, that changes as it needs to.
Mm-hmm.
Which just sounds so incredibly exciting to me.
Yeah, and of course the basis of all of those forms of healing are energy in the body. And
right.
So one of the optimistic things about what's going on now is that the age of Aquarius is bringing that in big time, because Aquarius, basically you could say that Uranus rules Kundalini energy. It rules Qi.
Mm.
It rules the rising energy in the body. And I actually wrote a book about that called Liquid Light of Sex way back in 1991. And the issue with it is that you can time the Kundalini issues that people have according to Uranian transits, according to the transits of the planet Uranus. For instance, midlife crisis is caused by Uranus opposite Uranus in a person's natal chart. And that's pretty arcane stuff. But the point is, with the Uranian energy coming in strongly, then the various forms of energy medicine and energy teaching, like Qigong, are going to become they already are becoming very prominent. It's just going to get bigger and bigger.
It's going to be fascinating watching how Western cultures that have been based on science see the science underlying all those traditional systems and start integrating. I saw a recent article that they have scientifically shown what the Chinese medicine energy meridians are.
Mm-hmm.
They have found them as a structure in the body through some imaging process, which is huge.
It's huge because then you can use that for analysis. In other words, once you can see it, then there's all kinds of ways that you can analyze
but it,
for people.
Right, but it also is now saying we can see what you are talking about and validates that whole system of medicine and understanding the body.
Yeah,
and it'll take however long it takes, because medicine and all of science is ponderously slow to take on new things. But it's a huge step in the right direction.
Well, you'll see it going faster, too, because of the difference between the age of Pisces and Aquarius. Because the age of Pisces is all about believing that somebody is going to tell you how to fix it or how to do it or what to believe in, like religion. go to the doctor. It's very Piscean. And the age of Aquarius is all about personal autonomy. So more and more, each individual is starting to realize that they have to figure it out themselves. And then with all these modalities that are coming in, more and more people are finding a way to get in touch with that stuff and figure it out.
Right. You know. No wonder I've been in trouble my whole life. We always thought that we were just, you know, pushy, snotty kids, but no, it was, we were the early indigo kids.
Yeah, and I've got a funny background, because my dad was a doctor, and he was a really big doctor in the AMA, the American Medical Association, and my dad also was a natural healer. And so when we were kids, he said, what he told us is he said, basically, if you're smart, you won't go to doctors. And so there's four kids in our family, and two of us did go to doctors and two didn't. I don't, personally. I use alternative medicine. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate my dad for that, because he could see the truth, even though he was a practicing physician.
Well, the history of the AMA is really fascinating, because it was not about science and medicine. It was created as a trade organization to put homeopaths out of business.
Yeah.
By making scientific medicine the only thing that was legal, in quotation marks, passing laws that only licensed physicians could practice.
Yeah, I know. And that's a big deal, because, you know, at this point in time, quite a few people are fairly damaged by taking medications, a lot of medications, especially elderly people. Mm-hmm. And one of the only things that's really going to help you if you've been damaged by over-medication is actually homeopathy.
I think we're
going into a period now where I think homeopathy is really going to come back big and strong, because it's going to be a necessity. For example, vaccinations. You don't have to vaccinate your kid. You can work with a homeopath to avoid it.
Right, right. Well, that and herbal medicine. You know, I've become convinced that turmeric is the wonder drug that will save us all. It's good for everything. And as Groucho Marx said, I'm going to live forever or die trying. You know, I take so much turmeric, I shouldn't have anything ever go wrong.
I like that remark by Groucho Marx. That's a good one.
Yeah, as I always say, hell yeah, I'm a Marxist.
Because that's another issue right now. The generation who are older before me, which would be people who are around 90 or 100 years old, or no, let's see, 80 or 90 years old, basically people who are in their 80s and 90s are really fighting death, and that of course is also in the middle of a shift, because now the opportunity to choose letting go is coming forth. But our generation, and I think in my case, I'm 73, and so I'm talking about people who are in their 60s and 70s, are really fighting to have the control over leaving the planet if they want to. And we're winning the war, you know, so to speak.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm only a few years behind you.
Yeah.
peddling hard. I'll catch up.
No, but that's been a big, big, important battle, because I actually believe that you can't live freely if you don't have the choice to go when you want to go.
Right.
And I'm not trying to support suicide here or anything like that, but it's just if a person feels like they're caught and trapped in their body when they want to release, it really takes a lot of freedom away from people.
Right. And I think a big part of that that change in mindset is the medical world letting go of the idea that death is the enemy, that we must keep people alive at all costs, which creates all kinds of problems, both in terms of the conversation and people's expectations and all of that, but also in the way that they're handled and treated. When my parents died, I watched both sides of that. One of my parents had a chronic illness, and they kept keeping her alive for no reason that I could figure out. Was not easy to watch. And my dad basically went home at one point and said, I'm not going to fight this anymore.
Yeah.
And I got to be with him as he just let it all go.
Yeah, and he probably had a fairly enlightened death, because he decided, okay, this is my time. You know, and it's, of course, very difficult, whatever the circumstances are. But what I see, the biggest problem that I'm seeing is people fighting, something that's inevitable. There's one thing we know for sure, you're going to die.
Right.
That's about the only thing we actually really know.
Right, exactly. And that's why that Groucho Marx line is so wonderful. what a brilliant man he was. God.
Yeah.
So much fun. So why don't you give people an idea what books you have out now and what books are coming, and just, you know, give them a little window into your wonderful world and what they can go check out.
Okay, so regarding nonfiction, which is what I did for like 40 years, one of my books was called The Pleiadian Agenda, and that came through in 1995. And when I say came through, I channeled it. And that's the only book I've ever channeled. I think I'm probably channeling fiction at this time, but I'm not sure. When I say I channeled The Pleiadian Agenda, I called together a group of people who had the ability to question me, in this case about quantum physics and string theory and all kinds of advanced levels of science. And I did 18 sessions under I went in a channeled state with people questioning me. And those were transcribed, and I made them into a book called The Pleiadian Agenda. So that came out in 1995. And then once it came out, I realized that I didn't understand most of the material in the book, because it literally was totally channeled. So I spent 10 or 11 years studying my own book from a scientific point of view, and then wrote a book called Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, which came out in 2004. And Alchemy of Nine Dimensions is a scientific analysis of a channeled book. I think it's a it's kind of a unique thing. Then what happened was the scientific information in the Pleiadian Agenda kept on advancing, especially string theory. So then I revised Alchemy of Nine Dimensions in 2010. So if anybody's interested in that book, watch out for getting the 2010 edition and not the 2004 edition, because things advanced so rapidly and intensely during that period that I literally had to almost rewrite the book just to, you know, have it be on the level it needed. Then I wrote a trilogy called The Mind Chronicles, which is based on 100 sessions under hypnosis into my past lives. But they're not really my past lives. It's really the past of everybody, going back, in this case, 100,000 years.
Wow.
And I wrote a book called The Mayan Code, which was an analysis of the Mayan calendar based on Carl Coleman's research. I'm looking at a pile of books here.
Yep.
Wrote a book, as I told you earlier, called Catastrophobia, that then had to be rewritten, because again, Catastrophobia is a book covering the last 20,000 years in anthropology and archaeology.
Well, we may have 100,000 years of information, but we're running out of time at this
hour. Okay, that's okay. So anyway, you asked me, and so now I'm writing fiction.
I know. I knew it was going to be a lot of stuff, but we're just running out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. This is so much fun. Let's do this again.
Yes. Thank you very much.
My guest tonight has been Barbara Handclaw, who you can tell knows all kinds of amazing things and has written fascinating books. Thank you so much again for being on the show.
Thank you, David.
And if you happen to be curious about who's this guy, David, and what does he do, you can go to househealing.com. And there's all kinds of ways to get in touch with me, including a scheduling link for a 20-minute free phone conversation to take a look at a person, place, situation, whatever it may be, and see how my work might be helpful. You can also get information about the show at thefarkasfiles.com. The whole archive is there. But you can also access all the shows and all the shows on Empower Radio, because 24/7 there's amazing stuff on Empower Radio, by getting the Empower Radio app. And you can just click on any of the shows, and the whole archive is there, and you can choose which show you'd like to listen to. Always happy that you listen to ours, but there's other great stuff. We're also on most of the streaming media outlets, including TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes Podcasts, and who knows what else. Just search for Empower Radio or the Farkas Files, and there are lots of ways to listen to the show. So, what an amazing conversation with Barbara. I always learned so much from her. And I'm always grateful that I can do this show and share it with you as we were talking before. So wherever you are, whenever you are listening to this, thank you for being with me. Thank you one and all for being with me. And until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.